How do you see the current face of war in Ukraine? Because we know that there are two articles, one in Politico that says too little, too late. It says that it's getting over for them in Ukraine. And the other one in Wall Street Journal is saying that by 2025, the war in Ukraine is over and there is nothing to be saved in Ukraine. And
Well, I think the war in Ukraine is over in to some extent already. What we see now is that Russia is gaining some ground, but in essence, Ukraine has not prevailed, is not in a position to prevail, and has never been in a position to prevail. And this idea, which is repeated in the West, that we should have provided more weapons and so on, is I think is misleading. The problem of Ukraine is not having more weapons. As I explained many times, in fact, if you look at the number of tanks, for instance, if we add up all the tanks that Ukraine had before, in February 2022, and what it received from the West since then, we could see that if you add up everything, you would see that Ukraine had almost three times the number of tanks that Russia used in Ukraine. So it's not a question of numbers. It's a question of how you integrate that into a defense system. And when you receive one day a few Javelin missiles, the other day a couple of M777 howitzers, and a day after a couple of HIMARS, and then a couple of days later a couple of ATACMS, and then you ask for F-16, and you say, well, we'll receive them in 6 months, 8 months, 1 year, and so on and so forth. I mean, how can you build up a consistent defense system? It's simply impossible. It's impossible in the substance because all these equipment that come from all over the world were not designed to be integrated together. They come from various countries with various specs, and now in Ukraine they are brought together in something which is not even consistent with a command and control system. If you look, as I have said many times, if you look on the opposite side, on the Russian side, you will see that everything that comes on the battlefield is integrated into a command structure. Even the drones are integrated into a command and control system. So if you so you don't you avoid the overkill, for instance, having let's say a drone attacking a tank, and at the same time you have artillery attacking the same tank. You don't have that because the command and control that the Russians have set up is in fact a system that allows to select the best armament to fight a specific objectives, a specific objective. As a result, you don't spend ammunition for nothing. And you cannot do that on the Ukrainian side because all this equipment has never been integrated into something. The same happens with the drones. I mean, the Ukrainians have been very creative in developing drones and homemade drones and attached hand grenades and anti-tank grenades to them and so on. So they were very creative, and that's fine. The thing is that this equipment is used locally without, I mean, with the poor logistics, first of all, but let's put that aside. But above all, this equipment has never been integrated into the normal operational command and control structure. As a result, you have locally, you may have success here and there, but you may not. What the Russian can do is to convert a tactical success into an operational success. And that's why the Russians have the advantage. And we have also to understand that what the Ukrainians are not able to do is not just because they are incapable of doing that. It's also because the West is not able to do that. Because the West in the last 30 years never had to do that. For the simple reason that when the Western armies were committed in the Middle East or in Central Asia, in Afghanistan and so on, they had such a superiority that never had to manage their resources. They could just fire as they wanted because there is no need to select your objective carefully and so on. They could have overkill on objectives and so on. Problem is that when you do that against an enemy which is much weaker than you, there's no problem. But when you have an enemy which is equally strong or even stronger at you, then every ammunition you spend at the wrong place is ammunition spent at the wrong place and will not be replaced. So you're losing something. You are not gaining something. And that's exactly what the West was not able to provide to the Ukrainians. So the problem with the Ukraine, it's not a question of quantity, too little and too late. It's a problem. It's a qualitative problem, and that's quality. And again, that was repeatedly said by the Ukrainian military when they went into training in Germany or in the UK. They said, we are not trained for the right war. The guys who trained us may have expertise in the Sahel region or elsewhere in the world, but they don't know how the Russian fight. And that's exactly the problem that the Ukrainians are facing. They are not prepared for the right war. So it's not a question of equipment. And, you know, we have another conflict in Palestine, where you have the Palestinians having much weaker equipment, much less technological equipment, much less resources than the Israeli. But they are still winning. Why that? Because they have an operational consistency. They have little resources, but these resources are integrated into a consistent command and control system and a consistent doctrinal system. And that's why it works. The same applied to the Viet Cong against the US in the 60s and the early 70s. The problem is not the quantity of weapons, it's the way you use them. And if you are skilled in integrating your weapons into a consistent approach with consistent tactics, consistent operational objective, and so on, then I'm not saying that you have all the reason to be successful, but you have a solid ground for success. And that's exactly what is missing in Ukraine. Think just I was just reviewing the recent audition of Lloyd Austin, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, in front of the Senate Committee for the Armed Force Committee, and one of the senators asked him to define victory in Ukraine, and Lloyd Austin was incapable to define what would be victory. So meaning that when you are not able to define what could be victory, that means you're not able to define an objective. And if you're not able to define an objective, how can you lead an operation? I mean, you need, and that's the same, by the way, it's exactly the same when you address industrial strategy or economic strategy or social strategy, whatever you want to do. If you want to apply a strategy, you need to have an objective, and you need to have a tangible, concrete objective that you can even, and where you can measure whether you achieved or not. And if you are not able to do that, there's absolutely no chance to win. And that's exactly what Sun Tzu said. I think I mentioned that. I don't know if it was on your channel. In any case, that's what Sun Tzu said. I mean, 2,500 years ago, he said, "Without strategy, tactics is just noise before defeat." And that's exactly what we are witnessing in Ukraine. There is no strategy. There is no objective. We don't know what we want to achieve. Of course, you can intuitively, you could say, okay, what the Ukrainians want is to repel the Russian army to the borders, the 1991 borders, and so on. Okay, but the problem is that your objective must be consistent with your capacities and your capabilities. And if you just put an objective, you launch it in the air and hope that somehow you will achieve it, this is not the way of doing that. Your objective must be consistent with your resources, with your capabilities, with what you are able to achieve. And what we see now is exactly the opposite. We see that the idea of repelling the Russians towards the border might be for the Ukrainian an objective, but we see that the Ukrainians have not been able to do that in 2 years, and their military resources are shrinking. They're shrinking, and the we see that with the recruitment, which is has become almost an impossible task, and they have they started to recruit forcefully soldiers, and of course they started to recruit to do this forceful recruitment in on the land side of the country. They avoided the large cities, because in the large cities, if you try to do that, you will come on TikTok very quickly and things like that. So it's not good. So they started to do that on the periphery of Kiev and Lvov and so on. But now they have exhausted the capacities of the land side, meaning that now the forceful recruitment comes to the cities, comes to the Kiev and so on. So what do they have? Ukrainian do? They forbid now to make any video, because you have seen those video on Instagram, not Instagram, Telegram and TikTok about those forceful recruitment activities, and now it's forbidden to publish that. Otherwise, you may receive a condemnation of 8 years in prison. So, meaning that they are afraid of that, and they see that so that the society may collapse because of this kind of activities, and that's the reason why you have no criminal condemnation if you advertise this. And the other aspect is the this attempt that we have heard about a couple of days ago about a possible plot against Zelensky by two colonels of the counterintelligence. And that indicates that something is changing within the Ukrainian society. And we have exactly the opposite of what we have in Russia, by the way. So we in Russia, we have an increased stability and continuity, improvement, economic improvement as well. But we have exactly the opposite in Ukraine. And the problem is that in the last 2 years, and probably even before that, Ukraine felt protected by its narrative. And the media in the West promoted this idea that Ukraine was winning and there is absolutely no chance for Ukraine to lose this war. Russia had to lose and so on and so forth. So this probably boosted the confidence of the population in Ukraine, and probably even from the establishment. But the reality now comes knocking at the door, and we see that everything we said, or the media said in the last 2 years, was simply wrong, and there is a fundamental weakness in the Ukrainian system that the Ukraine has never been able to have the upper hand in the conflict against Russia. And that's exactly why Volodymyr Zelensky made very quickly in February 2022 and later in March 2022 attempts to negotiate with the Russians, because I think intuitively he felt that the war was lost at that point. And that's in fact the mistake he made when Boris Johnson and the Europeans came and asked him to withdraw his proposal to the Russians. And so there was no way that Ukraine could win against Russia. Was absolutely no, and today we are just witnessing that. So the question today is more to imagine or to foresee the scope of the defeat. The question is no to see if there will be a defeat or not. The question is how large it will be. And the more we push Ukraine in fighting the Russians, the more the defeat will be large, in fact. And that's exactly what we are witnessing today. So everything we have seen in the last couple of weeks in Ukraine, I mean, militarily, I think the situation is clear. We see the front line is collapsing, and there is no much capacity to go behind a kind of a defensive line. The Russians have done that in 2022 and 2023, that they built up this huge defense line that the Ukrainians never reached, as a matter of fact. They never reached the actual defense line. The Russians could fight before the Russians. So they had the defense line, the so-called Surovikin line, was in fact a fallback position. And if we look at what's going on today in Ukraine, we see the Ukrainians do not have this fallback position. They didn't prepare for that. There were some attempts, but it was not sufficient to provide a safe and solid fallback position. As a result, we have the front line collapsing, and I think probably in a few weeks we will have the Ukrainian army without solid defense, and that will be probably the probably start of the end for Ukraine. Now the question is how the population is saying that. I see more and more messages on coming from Ukraine asking for reconciliation, and it's interesting because you have I see those messages hidden in text, so they try to put that in a way that is not too obvious, because that would be punished in Ukraine, because when you start to advertise defeat, that's exactly the kind of thing we could see in other countries in World War II, for instance, or in World War I, when you were saying, oh, well, we could be defeated. Then you have criminal prosecution and all that, because you are discouraging, you are in fact undermining the government and the society and all that. So, and you have the same thing happening in Ukraine, but hidden in many messages what I received from Ukraine is they're asking, people asking for reconciliation, because they understand that this conflict leads nowhere for the Ukrainians. It leads only to defeat and to more casualties and fatalities. Again, in the West, we tend to say, well, you know, the Russians are suffering casualties and fatalities, so not the Ukrainians. And even Volodymyr Zelensky coming up a few weeks ago saying that they had only 31,000 fatalities in the Ukrainian army. I mean, nobody believes that. I mean, I don't know what's the exact figure, because nobody knows that, but 31,000 seems to be completely delusional. So there are probably hundreds of thousands, and many people now are even mentioning the word of a million of fatalities. I don't know if it's true. It's probably not as much, but it means that some are coming up with figures that nobody thought about just a few months ago, meaning that there is a sense in the Ukrainian population that the defeat is much harder than publicly acknowledged. And that may affect the morale of the population as well. As a result, we see that there is no much positive prospect for the Ukrainians. If you add to this that the even NATO has acknowledged that the situation cannot be salvaged by any troops on the ground, and there is apparently a draft document that circulates for the next NATO summit, where allegedly it could be stated and officially stated that NATO will not deploy troops or boots on the ground in Ukraine, meaning that Western or NATO countries, NATO members, have come to the point to realize that whatever you put on the ground, that will not solve the situation. That will just make the situation worse for the rest of Europe, because then their own countries will be, or government, better, their own government will be then at stake, because in most countries, people question the support that we are providing to Ukraine. Because it's pointless. We see that the support providing to Ukraine is, in fact, is leading to a worse situation for Ukraine, not for a better situation. So I personally think that we should have realized that already 1 year ago. I've written that in my books more than 1 year ago, and that was obvious at that time. I mean, there was no question about this. It's not a question of wisdom, let's say, it's not because you wish victory that you will get victory. If we observe the situation on the ground, if you rely on the objective information that is available, then you had to come to this conclusion already more than 1 year ago, that there was no positive prospect for Ukraine. So we are just pushing Ukraine to collapse more and more. But this is, and it, as I said, this is interesting, because in 2019, as the RAND Corporation published its strategy to extend Russia and eventually to destabilize Russia, it wasn't a chapter related to the risk of that strategy. The RAND Corporation analysts said that there is a huge risk in implementing this strategy that Ukraine would lose a lot of personnel, lose territory, and will be pushed into an inconvenient peace. So we knew that it was going to be fatal for Ukraine. It was known. We could have anticipated that, but nevertheless, we tried to do it, knowing that it would be at the cost of Ukraine. And we see even Josep Borrell very recently said, I think in a speech he gave to Oxford University. I may be wrong on that, but I think it was to students of Oxford University. In any case, he said that Europe could stop this conflict within weeks by just stopping providing support to Ukraine. And he said, interestingly, because that has been quoted several times in some papers, but what he said before that is equally important, and no media reported that he said, we are part of the problem. We in fact created that situation for Ukraine. That's what he said. So they knew that they were pushing Ukraine in that situation. He said, we created that situation. But now we could stop the conflict, but we don't want that. Simply because they don't want to lose their face. And that's exactly the problem. We are in the what you can call the sunk costs fallacy, that when you invest in a project and you see that the investment leads nowhere, instead of stopping funding that project, you continue because you hope that you don't want to lose what you have already invested. But if the project leads nowhere, it will lead nowhere. So the more money you will put in that project will lead nowhere. So you will even lose more. So economically, mathematically, this is a total wrong type of reasoning, but we are still applying that. We have invested so much in Ukraine that we are afraid stopping funding it. As a result, we will lose everything we have invested. We will lose Ukraine, and Ukraine will lose probably itself, because the only solution for the Russians now is to push ahead with the collapse of Ukraine. Because if, as long as Ukraine exists, it will be supported by the West, then the obvious solution is that Ukraine must cease to exist. I don't know what is in the mind of the Russians, but looking at the logic of this approach, it leads to the disappearing of Ukraine. This is tragic, and I think here the West has a huge responsibility. And but okay, that's the way it is, unfortunately.